Hi, this is Hannes Finney with Storyworthy, obviously. And Christine and I want to thank you for all you've done to help our numbers shoot way up in the past 3 months. We are available on Stitcher, on SoundCloud. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. Keep telling your friends. Keep telling your enemies. Tell anyone that you know to keep listening to Storyworthy because it's worth it. It's worth it.
Hey, it's Ron Zimmerman. Here comes Storyworthy, and it is a very worthy show.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I am here alone. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, is absent today from the Storyworthy podcast. Now, never fear, he will be back. He's sick, and I know he must be really sick because he would not miss podcasting. He enjoys it that much. So I am here at Sideshow Network. We decided to leave the Storyworthy van of truth in the garage, and I am actually here in studio with Anthony Bench, who is helping me out today with sound. But Hannes Finney is ill today. Here are his symptoms: fever, lack of energy, achiness. I don't know. I'm so pissed. I don't think the last part was as much a symptom as he's just telling us, you know, of course, how he's feeling. But this is odd, I have to say, because Hannes and I have been doing Storyworthy now since July of 2010, which, I'm not good at math, Anthony, but I believe that's like 3.5 years. And that's good. That's a good amount of time. But this is, in fact, the very first time Hannes has not been with me. So I'm vulnerable. I'm alone. I do have clothes on, but it's okay. It's going to work out. We're going to push through. This is show business, people. That's what this is. And I have a guest on the program tonight who I'm very excited about. His name is Ron Zimmerman, and he's been on the podcast before. He did a little story, Anthony, called The Suicide Kid. Oh. So you know what that was about?
No.
It was about suicide.
Yeah.
The Suicide Kid. And Ron had tried to jump in front of a train at the age of 12. And that's pretty much suicide right there. But tonight, he brings forth a story about leaving Hollywood. Leaving Hollywood. Anthony, you live here. Well, no, you don't live in Hollywood. You live in Anaheim. But you work here in Hollywood, which is actually a little interesting thing that people out there don't seem to know, is that not everybody who lives in Hollywood is in show business, and not everybody in show business lives in Hollywood. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, because so you live in Orange County.
I do.
He lives on the other side of the Orange Curtain. That's far. But that is true. Hollywood is pretty spread out. It's not like the 60s and 70s when it seemed really concentrated, you know? Now people do seem to be, you know, they're out in the valley or they're down in Santa Monica or Playa Vista. Why did I say Playa Vista? I have no idea.
Is that a real place?
Playa Vista is a real place.
Oh, wow.
but not Hollywood proper, you know what I mean? And so, yeah, so Ron Zimmerman's got a story about leaving Hollywood, and I believe he tried to move back to Indiana, somewhere in the Midwest, and we're going to hear about how that went. I've been in L.A. for 17 years. I'm from Pittsburgh, and as you know, may or may not know, and I think it's very unlikely I'm leaving Hollywood anytime soon. That being said, it's not like I haven't thought about it, you know, because I am a single mother, as it were, and so I have a child, and it would be easier in other parts of the country. I know this. You know, I go back to Pittsburgh to visit my family. My sisters have very big houses, many cars, many rooms and space and furniture, and I, you know, that would be a valid choice. What would I do there? That I don't know. Perhaps I could work in a store. I used to be a flight attendant. I could do that again, but I don't want to do that.
Newscaster.
Come on now.
I don't know.
People that are newscasters are very accomplished and good at what they do. It's true. and they have to start off in these little shithole towns and work these shithole shifts. And like I said, I got a kid. So that brings me back to leaving Hollywood. Would I leave Hollywood? No. No, I'm not leaving Hollywood. The thing is, where I live, there's a lot of mixed incomes, right? So there's people in apartments. There's people in huge, beautiful homes. There's people with swimming pools. Then there's people that go to the public pool. But we're all kind of living in the same space. You know what I mean? Going to the same park, going to the same Trader Joe's. I don't know. I love where I live because I feel like there's culture everywhere. It's not monotonous. It is not cookie cutter. And there's every ethnicity you can imagine. You hear every language going on. But that being said, I hear helicopters. I hear sirens. There's a floodlight that is directed into my bedroom window, I kid you not, for security reasons outside the apartment building. But it shines into my room that I literally set off. That's right. You heard me, Ron Zimmerman. I set this goddamn light off. It's a motion detector. And I have to duck when I get out of the bed to pee in the middle of the night. Did you hear what I said?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. So you living in the city, you do have to put up with some of these things. And, you know, you have to be able to live in a small space. I love where I live in Hollywood. But that being said, I can live in a small space. You know, come on. Come on, you guys. I was in the fucking Peace Corps. You know what I'm saying? Like, I lived with, like, you know, a family of four in a hut. And I was very happy. So it's like, I know people that have nothing. They don't even have shoes, for Christ's sakes. And they're very happy. You know, now, would they choose a refrigerator in the house and perhaps running water? Yes. Yes, they probably would. But my point is, if you're going to leave Hollywood, you might have a bigger house. You know, you might have, I don't know, a lot of nice things, but I don't know. I don't see that happening. You guys, I did want to mention a couple things here about Storyworthy. First of all, you know you can hear us on Stitcher Radio, Stitcher.com. That's a great way to hear not only Storyworthy, but a lot of other fine podcasts. All right, you guys. Hey, and also, if you'd like to support the show, please feel free to head on over to StoryworthyPodcast.com anytime you shop on Amazon. We all do that. And you click on our banner ad, and that will indeed help us out. Also, there's a donate button right there on that page as well, storyworthypodcast.com. And if you feel inclined to do that, we sure would appreciate it. All right, you guys, please send out all the good vibes for Hannes Finney, who is not feeling well today, but will be back. He will be back very shortly. So, folks, wherever you are, please don't go anywhere. Ron Zimmerman is on his way here. Next week on Storyworthy, we have writer Susanna Brisk.
And I'll be talking about MILFs.
Next week on Storyworthy.
This is Huell Hauser, and you're listening to Storyworthy. With both ears. You can't see us. We're in your head.
All right, you guys, we are back, and we're still here at Sideshow Network with Anthony Bench helping us out. Sean Merrick, he's in the other room. Somebody said Roddy Swearingen is here today. I have not seen him.
I think he's hiding.
He may be hiding. We don't know. We've got Diet Coke, we've got regular Coke, and we've got bottles of water. So
Swedish fish.
And Swedish fish. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Swedish fish, individually wrapped. All right, you guys, he's here right now, Ron Zimmerman. He is a comedian and a writer, and he's worked primarily in the television and comic book medium. You also may remember him from his days at the Howard Stern Show. And you can find him on Twitter, at RonZimmerman_1. All right, folks, wherever you are, put your hands together for Ron Zimmerman.
Hello, hello, hello. You can't find me on Twitter. I shut down my Twitter page.
Wow.
I did. Couldn't take it anymore. You can find me on Facebook under just Ron Zimmerman, and I have a fan page, the worst fan page in the history of maybe the entire internet. But Twitter I had to stop because my As you know, I have a well-known ex-girlfriend, and I went from having about, you know, 1,000 followers of people that actually liked me and did anything that I've done to one tabloid story and 5,000 followers, 4,000 girls that were fans of my ex-girlfriend that so monopolized, that used my site as like as sort of like, oh, I see, this must be the I'll just say the name and get it over. This must be the Share Annex page. So nobody I knew ever wrote me or anything, because there was always pages of little girls writing, what's her house look like? How long is her hair? What did she eat for breakfast? And we were broken up too, so I didn't know what she was eating for breakfast. And as sweet as they were, they drove me kind of crazy, and everything I was tweeting, jokes that obviously 14-year-old girls weren't going to get. And to my surprise, this woman has a gigantic 14-year-old girl fan base they actually call themselves the Share Crew. It was just such a nightmare. And every once in a while, somebody would write something mean on there about me. Hey, you're too ugly to be with her. And then the Share Crew would jump in and go, shut up, we hate you. Block this guy. What are you doing? We love Ron. And it got so ridiculous that I just recently, I decided, you know what? I can't do it anymore, because I never heard from, my friends were, I'd put something funny on and I wouldn't get one of those, Richard Belzer favorited your thing, because he wasn't reading my page. It was full of, everybody on the page was named I love Cher, Cher and me, I wish I was Cher, Cher's hair, Cher's foot, It just became, it was so weird, and none of it had anything to do with me. So I had to shut that puppy down, and maybe sometime I'll go back on it. I'm not so sure. I don't think I ever really understood how Twitter works to begin with. So it was always, running out of characters and, it's characters, characters, that's Chinese, running out of characters. That's Chinese. America, you run out of words. You don't run out of characters. You run out of, they give you so many words. Why can't they just, I fear the internet is destroying the English language. And this fear started recently with the word selfies. I mean, tweeting, a tweet, a Twitter, a tweet, all that was so horrible to begin with. It was such a rape of English already. But then, I don't know, somehow selfies just hit me in the face like somebody punched me. And it was like, selfies? And I heard, somebody that I like, someone I respect on television, and said, boy, it's hard to get a good selfie. And, it's somebody that shouldn't even be saying that. There's people you just, do you ever really want to hear like Bruce Springsteen say selfie? Hey, I got a selfie. Come on. Come on, Miami Steve. Let's get a selfie. I don't want to hear that. And I blame Twitter for all of this. Facebook seems like fine. It seems like that's enough. Facebook is, it's easy. You don't get a limit on your characters. you know, it's perfectly fine. Instagram, you know, they might as well give me a Phillips head screwdriver and put me in front of a nuclear reactor and go, hey, can you fix this? Because Instagram, I have no idea how that works. Or, I mean, I'm sure there's a whole language to that, too. You know, you have to do an Insta selfie or something. And so I just went on the, I just typed it in, went on the site, looked at the page, and was like, oh, no, never, never. I don't know, never. I can never do this. So all this means I'm old, but then, and then I looked up a thing and it said the, like the demographic for each thing was, you know, Instagram, you know, 9 to 16, Twitter, 16 to 35, Facebook, you know, 50 to death. And that's the, you know, that's who's on Facebook now. Apparently it's just people that, you know, people that have incurable diseases, you know, people that are, they're dying of various colon ailments and incurable diseases, and, you know, precancerous people are all on Facebook, and I'm more comfortable with them. You know, I'd rather just be with people whose funerals I speak at rather than the other way around. Isn't that what happens? I think, like, even once you're over 40, you're just kind of hoping that you know, God, I hope I get to talk at his funeral and not the other way around, you know, and especially with comedy, you know, comedians' funerals. Ever been to a comedian's funeral? It's a show. It's not a funeral. It's a show. People write sets and then go up and perform because it's like, Seinfeld's going to be there. So they're auditioning at funerals. People audition at funerals to just, you know, it's like Paul Reiser's in the Paul Reiser's Paul Reiser's a you know, God, I can't think of the word. Paul Reiser's a pallbearer. Make sure you have a good 10 minutes. I mean, I have seen people do sets at comedians' funerals. And I mean, really set, like Richard Jenny, you know, who killed himself. And I've still seen people go, you know, Rich Jenny was one of my closest friends. And being at his funeral reminds me of this gig we did in Jersey once where somebody hit Rich with a pie while he was on stage. And, you know, I mean, just, you know, insane. And also there's that thing of, you know, I promised myself I wouldn't cry because, God damn it, this guy was, you know, he was such a great dude. And, you know, I remember this one bit he did. And then they start doing his material. Which I guess, you know, you say, wow, that's taking the most sincere form of flattery just a little too far. You know, and leaving Hollywood. Well, a year ago, I decided that I'd had enough of, you know, going to funeral shows and everything else that comes with being in show business. And I've been, you know, I've been writing and producing bad TV shows for 30 years and made so many people so much money and somehow not ended up, you know, a zillionaire myself. And I just got to that point where, you know, when your own agent is trying desperately to get off the phone with you to the point where they use that, you know, the agent thing of, listen, I got a call on the other line that's about you. I got to go, which is my favorite agent blow off. You know, call on the other line. It's about you trying to work you a deal, and you have nothing going on. So, you know, it's not about you, but, so I was born in a town called Wabash, Indiana. This town is 10,000 people. To put that in perspective, the Staples Center seats more than 10,000 people. So one good wave at the Staples Center is more people waving than occupy an entire town in America. So, so I have my only family lives there, and some cousins, nieces, nephews, whatever. And I had one cousin in particular that has been trying to get me to leave Hollywood and go there because it's, you know, it's such a great place to be. And it's cheap, and it's, you know, it's real America, and, you know, haven't you had enough of the bullshit of show business? And just finally caught me when I had had enough of the bullshit of show business. So I was like, yeah, okay, I'm ready to go. I was renting a house in Sherman Oaks in the Valley for like $4,000 a month, and going house broke anyhow, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to sell everything I own except, you know, the couch, a bed, whatever. Take my dogs, and I'm going to move. She had found a place for me to rent that was the most incredible place. I hadn't ever seen it, but she sent me pictures and stuff, and it was a 5,000 square feet house, okay, with a 4-car garage that I was planning to make into little studios to shoot all the web series that I was going to make in this town. And it was on 6 acres, and it was the biggest lot in, you know, anywhere in town. It was like a mini farm. And I decided because I have a green thumb that I wanted to go be a farmer. I was going to leave here after 30 years of, you know, writing, Lord knows, you know, dialogue for Stephen Collins on Seventh Heaven. I was going to go to Indiana and be a farmer in a town. I mean, to say it's in the middle of nowhere is just so flattering to the town. It's like, you know, Indianapolis is 2.5 hours away. And I've gone there, you know, I've gone back to visit many times, and always, you know, it's like, oh, the Hollywood guy, you know, hey, man, I saw you on this. I saw, you know, they couldn't be nicer. So I thought, well, okay, this might work out as a good life. Everybody loves me. You know, I'll be the town celebrity. So I pack up my stuff. I drive to my dogs, my three dogs and me. And off to our new farmhouse we go to Wabash, Indiana, you know, which is just only about 2,400 miles away. And then we get there, and it is a big, giant, old farmhouse. And like a big, giant, old farmhouse, nothing in it works. It's so old that the fixtures and things are like, you walk in and you go, and it's like a time warp. You, I'm in the Grapes of Wrath. You know, I'm Tom Joad all of a sudden, you know, and mama, you know, the house was so old. There was the stove in the kitchen had one of those griddles that look really good. You know, you see them in restaurants, and it's like, man, I'll be frying the hotcakes and, you know, got a griddle. It'd be great stuff to do. Well, that worked for 4 days, I think, and then just stopped for no particular reason. It was actually a half griddle, and the other half was like a grill. So I was like, well, I'll be making burgers, you know, a chicken and waffles, you know, And then the grill stopped 2 days after the griddle stopped, and the landlords never came to fix anything. It was it had wallpaper. The house had this wallpaper on it that was peeling off, and you couldn't see any of this in the pictures, of course. But it had little flowers and stuff on it. But what I thought was kind of a beige color. Wasn't beige. It was beige from cigarette smoke everywhere. So the whole house was I mean, you'd open a like a closet, and the cigarette smoke in the closets, in the shelves, and I smoke, and it still made me want to throw up because it was like. There's like there must be, you know, little small town elves in every closet smoking all night and all day. And so even they and they left like, well, we'll leave you towels and things, you know, half partially furnished. And you couldn't use any sheets or towels because they smelled like 100-year-old cigarettes. You know, when you put your cigarette out in water and then leave that. For you know, a week, and the water turns red. Well, that's, it was like they washed the house with that water. And in the center of the house where the big hallway was down to the four extra bedrooms was a whole area with another kind of front door. There was two sort of front doors, like farmhouses have a lot of front doors. And where the stairs to the basement were, which is where you go if there's a tornado, and I learned late that Indiana is in the tornado belt. It's the corn belt and the tornado belt. And I wasn't rushing to get in the basement because I've seen enough horror films to know in small towns, the basement or the attic of any house is the gateway to hell. But the owners had cats. And apparently didn't want them to get eaten by the no predators in the state of Indiana that they were worried about because there are no, I looked this up, there are no predators in Indiana. There's like no coyotes, no wolves, no bears. There's deer, skunks, raccoons and stuff, things that aren't going to eat your cat. But they kept the cats in. So there was a smell of cat piss in the center of the house. That was so pungent, it could almost drop you to your knees if it hit just right. It was just unbelievable. And me and my nieces and nephew, we scrubbed this stuff with like that soap that smells good and every possible thing, and nothing could cut through this cat piss smell. And then every bedroom, there was five bedrooms, and every bedroom was had the way it was like nothing had been touched since 19, you know, since the first stock market crash. You know, nothing had been touched. And I remember sitting in one of the rooms one night, talking on the phone about 11 o'clock at night to somebody and looking around and going, you know, except for the fact that I'm on a cell phone, this could be 1930, and I'm just in a room that doesn't look any different than I know it did in 1930, and it was just well, anyway, so I went out and I bought seeds and I started digging up land to plant my crop, And now I'm not realizing that the difference between moving there and visiting is very unusual. And somehow, even though I can't, you know, my neighbors, I never see them or anything, but they're all looking at me. One day, I was out, and it also I went and in May, and I got there in April, and by May it was excruciatingly hot and sticky hot. You know, here it gets hot, but it's nice hot. There, it's East Coast hot, sticky hot. So you take a shower, and then the minute you step outside, you're wet and sticky again. So you never feel clean. You're always wet and sticky. And I'm out there, and it's so hot that you can barely wear clothes at all. So somebody had given me a kilt. And I go out and I put this kilt on and a wife beater, and I'm out there digging holes to plant stuff in. And somebody sees me. Within 2 hours later, one of my cousins calls me, who's a lawyer, and he's in a nearby town, and says, "What are you doing wearing a dress out and digging holes?" And I was like, "What?" And he goes, And I'm like, well, it's a kilt, number one. And who, how do you even know this? He goes, the city attorney lives two places down from you, and his kids saw you and called their dad to say, the Hollywood guy is wearing a kilt digging holes. You know, he's wearing a dress and he's digging holes. Actually, before that, there was a whole acre of just beautiful grass before the farmage area. And they had one of those John Deere ride around lawnmowers, which I've never used. I don't know that there's a pattern you're supposed to cut this shit on. And I go out there to cut it. I can't figure it out. So I end up, and I don't know that people are looking at me in this place. I can't figure it out. So I just cut a giant Z in the back, in the lawn. Well, of course, that ends up in the paper. That hits the paper 2 days later. You know, Hollywood guy that moves here cuts giant Z to mark Zimmerman lawn, and neighbors are furious. So after pretty soon I realized that there's nothing to do there at night or day. You know, it's this town. Now I start going out at night downtown, which is a 5 minute walk, and I am kind of digging that there's like no traffic. Oh, by the way, my house, 5,000 square feet, 6 acres, woods, lawn, everything, $1,000 a month. Just to give you a little perspective on that. $1,000 a month for that. And but you're there. So I go downtown and I go to there's two bars where everybody hangs out, Smitty's and Scotty's. And by the way, I also learned that the motorcycle dudes in LA, like out in Malibu or wherever you see them, like the Harley riding guys that everybody, you know, ooh, stay clear of them. Okay. Those are Hollywood Harley riding guys. They're not, you know, they're actors. They're all extras on Sons of Anarchy. You know, they're not really looking to hurt anybody. They just want to look like guys that hurt people. Where I was, having a Harley is the equivalent of here of in an urban place of having a Bentley. So if you have a Harley, you're successful, but you're also somebody that's probably either just out of prison or heading into prison soon. So the Harley riding guys there, they're not working on Sons of Anarchy. They are Sons of Anarchy. These are like real Harley riding guys that have real guns and beat people up for real and are in and out of the prison, which, by the way, is 4 miles out of town. And I learned that these little towns, people wonder where the veterans go. Well, I can tell you, they go to Wabash, Indiana. And if you want to know what PTSD really is, go to a town, go to any little town in America, and go to Scotty's or Smitty's bar, and there's one in every little town, and start talking to a young guy with a crew cut, and your hair will be standing up. By the time you leave, you'll be so terrified. And you'll walk out of there going, oh, God, please don't bring them back from Afghanistan. Please don't bring these people home. Start another war. Keep them out of here. Because these poor kids are terrifying. There's kind of a variety of little incidents. The other thing that I thought was great was that as a visitor – everybody was you know, I was literally giving autographs when I went for like a wedding or something. When people found out I had actually moved to Wabash, Indiana, they hated my guts. And I'd go to the bar and they would say, you know, wait a minute, you know, you're the Hollywood guy. You're the guy you went out with Cher and you moved here. Are you out of your fucking mind? I swear to God, I'd kill my own child to get out of this town. I hate it here. Everybody hates these little towns. Everybody wants out of these little towns. So if you're somebody that's had a better life and you move back, this is for you, Christine, so that you can understand what will happen to you. If you actually did move back and didn't visit, they will hate your guts because they think you're mocking them by moving back. So it becomes like, so what are you doing? Just making fun of us moving here? You know, is this just like a kick for you to come here with all your fancy money and rent the biggest place in town for $1,000 a month? You know, man, if I had $1,000 a month, you know, I'd live in Hawaii. And so ultimately I'd go in the bars. Everybody hated my guts after 2 months. Nobody would talk to me. I wasn't the town celebrity. I was like the town alien. I was Mork Zimmerman. And people just didn't want any. A leper planting tomatoes and blueberries in a kilt that everyone basically was just, you know, ran from when I would go in a restaurant or store. And nobody wanted anything to do with me. And by August, I couldn't get out of that fucking town fast enough to the point of the owners who didn't want to live in this place either said, what if, will you stay if we cut the rent in half from $1,000 to $500 a month? And I was like, no, for free, I won't stay here one more day. And then one of my three dogs died, and from the heat, had a heat stroke, and I had to put to sleep because you got paralyzed from the heat. And I was like, you know what? Okay, you've taken everything else. I'm out of here.
Ron Zimmerman, that is one of my favorite stories.
Thank you.
It was very long, I'll say that.
Okay.
But it was, no, it was the longest story, but it was so funny. I don't understand, what did you think was going to happen?
I guess I thought it would be like when I visited, you know, that everybody would be nice to me all the time.
But did you think you would find, like, creative type people like yourself that would want to come into your farmhouse and record in your studios?
Yes.
You did?
Yeah.
Did you know there was no air conditioning?
No, but I was told, you know, well, this house is on a hill. It gets a great breeze. You don't need it. There's a fan in every room.
Oh, my gosh.
And then I was at the hardware store buying those window units, you know.
And so what does Cher's house look like? I'm kidding. Listen, this is really funny. I do feel like when I go back to Pittsburgh, there's something about the fact that I left Pittsburgh, you know, that maybe I am like the reason why they get that feeling, like if you come back, like, are you mocking us? It's kind of like, because when they see somebody who's left the fold, as it were, they left the security and the ease of living in your hometown or the cost of living, things like that, then that's like a dream. And if you come back, then their dream has failed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's crushing.
Yeah, I think there is that thing of like I just never got past the what's wrong with you.
Right.
Thing, you know. So I mean, yeah, you're right. They project, like, you know, fantasies of what their life, what they wish they could have done.
Right.
Which is get the fuck out of there.
Like kind of living vicariously through you.
Right.
So that if you choose to move back for the reasons that you did,
nobody cares.
That simplicity is gone. Right. They're thinking like, wait a minute, and we know that.
And nobody cares what your reasons are. You know? Well, everybody lies a lot.
You know what I have found, Ron? Nobody really cares anyway. Like, it's hard to find anybody that even cares what you do. Not you, but anybody.
No.
Like, if I moved back to Pittsburgh, you guys would say it, Anthony, and then you would, like, move on. It'd be like, oh, did you hear Christine moved back to Pittsburgh? Oh, really? What's for lunch? Who's coming in?
Well, it's like dying.
Nobody really cares. Yeah, dying.
You get a little bit of
attention there at the end, just a little blip of attention.
Yeah.
And then.
Boo-hoo.
What's for dinner?
Yeah, boo-hoo. Well, boo-hoo. You know, the sun still comes up the next day.
What would you do, Anthony?
We would hold a candle vigil for you.
Anthony said they'd hold a candle vigil for me, which, number one, no necesita. But also.
You should have to be murdered.
You could play some Neil Young. I'd appreciate that. Okay. That's about it.
You have to get murdered to get a good candle vigil.
You have to get murdered or be abducted and then kind of draw it out.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't get a candle vigil for cancer.
Let me ask you this then, Ron. So you basically had left L.A. or left Hollywood for 5 months?
Mm-hmm.
5 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is this California attitude that they have? In other words, they think you're a star. They think you live in the mansion out here, where ironically the mansion is back there.
Right.
Although it wasn't a mansion, but it could be with that space.
Sure. Yes.
And they think you surf.
They think you're like you know that you get up in the morning, and you know you go to a studio, and I hate saying they, but you know people. I guess have this idea that you get up in the morning and it just kind of everything's glamorous. You know, you go out to the beach and you surf or you run on the beach and then you get ready to go to an awards show.
And then, right, exactly. Then you go to a late night club and you do a little salsa dancing, you know, because the band's playing. And then you get up and you get ready for a lavish brunch.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, then after the salsa dancing, then you go to a place, you know, a club where it's all celebrities. And you end up sleeping with somebody, you know, you
it's
sleep
so
with Lindsay Lohan.
I don't think they understand is like being in Los Angeles or being in Hollywood, as we're putting it today, there's days that, maybe you're on set or maybe you have a meeting or maybe you're doing a podcast or maybe you see a great show. But in between all that, there's just regular life, right? So you go to the bathroom, you got to go grocery shopping, you got to pick up your kid. I got a kid, Ron. It's very day to day. I pack 5 lunches a week.
Well, there is some huge differences, though, that you don't realize until you're far from it. Where I remember many years ago, I was real depressed and I was hating it here and I was driving down Coldwater Canyon. Okay, and just living my life,
right?
Not going anywhere special, and I pull up to a stoplight, and an old Mercedes pulls up next to me, and I look, and Peter Falk is in the Mercedes. Okay, and I'm looking, and I'm like, wow, Columbo is in the car right next to me.
There are LA moments that happen all the time. I mean, I love that.
But that's right, and that's what you know, people that don't live here think your entire life is that.
No, that only happens twice a year. You have a really cool run-in.
Maybe three times
a year.
But still, it's the fact that I think that's what keeps people here. As a matter of fact, that incident kind of cheered me up because I did think, where else could I live?
Absolutely.
Where I pull up to a stoplight and Columbo is in the car next to me.
Absolutely. No,
like,
I love
that.
Wow,
what a
LA.
Great place.
It is a great place. It's better than corn and tornadoes, I'll say that.
Yeah.
Listen, do you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Sure.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true 1-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Breakup. Okay. This is a general breakup thing. I think everyone should break up over the phone, email, text, any way but in person. Because the cruelest thing I think you can do to another human being is make them get up, get out of bed, put on clothes, you know, try to look nice, get in their car, go somewhere, be in public just to tell them, I really don't ever want you to lay your hands on me again. You know, your touch makes me want to vomit, whatever it is. You know, I can't bear you anymore. Get out of my life. To make somebody get dressed and look good to hear that is the cruelest thing in the world. Nobody, it should be banned.
What that was is more of advice.
Yeah.
It was breakup advice from Ron Zimmerman.
Yes.
And well, so what kind of breakup do you like to hear? Like, it's not you, it's me.
Oh,
or
no.
I've really, you know, I mean, what are the words? I guess none of the words are going to be good. So you just want to rip it off like a Band-Aid?
Absolutely.
Just say, look, it's not happening. I got to move on.
We're done.
We're done here.
Yeah, I don't want to, you know, we're done. Because I don't even want a detail. Because any detail is going to really hurt your feelings.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the sex isn't good.
You're
fat. None of this is coming out well. You were good looking when I met you. You're not funny anymore. Whatever it is, it's bad. Just go.
Just say it.
Yeah. Forget and don't say it.
Listen.
Write it.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah.
Send it.
Put it in your email. I think a text is harsh. I think email is a nice between.
All of it's better than doing it in person.
And you really can't have a Twitter account. I'm so sorry.
I can have one. I have to open a new one with like a different name.
Like the real Ron Zimmerman or something like that.
No, because that's how it'll get all those.
Share Crew.
Yeah, that's what I need. No, I need it to be like there, Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Yeah, just something completely different.
Yeah, Tony Bennett's son.
Let me ask you, what don't you like about Los Angeles?
Okay, one thing I learned about, no rain. Mm. Rain is nice.
Right.
You know, I missed rain. I didn't realize I missed rain, but
it really doesn't rain here.
No, it never rains.
No, it's rained like in August, as I recall.
Yeah, it rains twice a year.
No, in 2013, they only got 3 inches all year long. It's actually a big problem.
I miss rain, but there's nothing wrong with here except the people.
Oh, come on, man.
It is. It's beautiful. It's lovely, but this place, Los Angeles, because of showbiz, it is populated by the most, you know, not 100%, but obviously, you know, enough of it is the most ruthless.
It is ruthless.
Ambitious,
I'll say that. It is.
Cruel.
But it's needle in a haystack. I mean, if you find your friends, you find your group of people, you find your routine, then you can kind of leave a lot of that bullshit aside, if possible. It doesn't mean you'll get ahead, though, right?
I'll tell you. I have a friend, one of my favorite. I think the after Larry David, after Larry David, the greatest comedy true genius that I've ever met is a guy named Jim Vallely,
mm-hmm.
And he wrote and produced Arrested Development and a variety of things, but he has this great line about where he says, in Hollywood, you can tell who your real friends are because they're the people that don't fuck you over too much.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I hope you speak at his funeral.
And that's how it is. It's like, you know, your best friends here are the people that you know, they don't fuck you over too much. Because they will, just not so much that it ends the friendship, you know.
Right.
You know, so because it's you know, that everybody's after such a big fish.
Well, the good news is there is content that needs to be had. You know what I mean? There does need to be. Everybody doesn't have to be Steven Spielberg or at the very top of the game. There's a lot of room for in between, and there's a lot of people making an okay living and not being famous.
I've always said and might even be on my tombstone, it's lonely at the bottom of the top too.
Yeah, exactly.
And
it's not where you are, it's who you're with.
Yeah,
it's in your head, really.
I mean, the bottom of the top, by a lot of, you know, by 90% of people, if you make it to the bottom of the top, you've made it.
Rock on, Ron Zimmerman. I totally hear you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I managed to make it long enough where I can retire. and not, you know, not be really rich, but I can afford to retire.
That's right.
On, you know, I get a pension and with some residuals and stuff, I can afford to retire. You know, but I'm sort of happily at the bottom of the top, but I lasted long enough.
It's not a bad place to be.
Yeah. It's like, you know, that then this is might be one of the few places where I mean, when everybody's going for such a prize,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you can just end up retiring and not broke.
I don't even know about retiring. I think it's a lifelong thing. I don't know if there is such thing as retirement in show business.
Well, I don't know. Ask Johnny Carson.
Well, he's dead, isn't he?
But he retired. He really did retire.
Well, I can. Yes. I mean, Jay Leno's retiring.
I didn't even know that.
For that matter. Well, sure. Jimmy Fallon's taking over.
No, but
week.
I mean,
you know
Jay's going to still work.
He will. But the Tonight Show, you know, I mean.
No, but I mean, Jay will do clubs. Johnny Carson retired and never performed
again.
Oh, he
truly just said, I'm going to Palm Springs for life.
He went out to his house and he had a boat and he appeared on Letterman once. And that was it.
Wow.
You know, I
different kind of retirement.
He never went in front of a camera again. You know, that's retiring.
That's retiring.
You know, Sean Connery retired. You know, Sean Connery made it, you know, whatever his last
movie
was.
So would you want to do that, Ron? Do you want to retire?
I don't know.
I mean, I thought, you know, you thought you did. That's why you went to Indiana.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
but truthfully, you know, you like the energy.
Yeah. I need a little of the action. You know, I need a taste.
All right,
it's a drug.
I could talk to you all day, but I can't talk to you all day.
I'll extend the show.
Because we got to wrap it up. Hannes Finney, did you miss him?
Yeah.
Did you?
Well, that's why I went long, because I figured, you know.
Well, you know, if people just can throw in their own witty repartee, sarcastic remarks, then it's like he's here.
There you go. So, but it's not because he... because this is all bullshit. Because nobody could fill his spot.
All right, you guys, we're going to wrap it up right about
that proves
now.
My point.
I would like to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Anthony Bench. Thanks for helping us out today. And of course, John Thomas Griffith. You know, he's the guy who wrote the theme song, Follow Me. I never heard of him. Yes, you have. I play it every week. And on behalf of my storyteller today, Ron Zimmerman, thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
And Hannes Finney, I sure do hope you feel better out there.
He's just scared of me.
My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story-worthy week. You can follow me, follow me. I'll take you down to the river. Follow me, follow me. I'll keep you silent.
Thanks for joining us on the Story-Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore, because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.